Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Oh! Josh Okogie! May the force be with you! Oh, my goodness, Karl Anthony Towns! He is not human!
He is catastrophic!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I am not Brendan Headke. I'm Tim Fakeless. I'm the editor-in-chief of A Wolf Among Wolves. Brendan was gracious enough to let me take the reins of the podcast for an episode. And with that, I thought of no better pair of people to bring on than a couple of folks that I podcasted with, twice a week for about a year. I started Wolves Wired with a guy named Zach Bennett. We did it for about 3 years. I spent a year working full-time covering the Wolves and kept the podcast going, but we changed a couple things up and we brought on two people. David Naylor first, Dane Moore second. I think Dane, you were like part of this massive round table with way too many people the first time you came on, but you were so good that we kept you on permanently after that. And they've gone on to do awesome stuff. Well, he's at an Arby's parking lot right now, but he's in Kansas City. Just finished covering the Loons win over Sporting KC last night. And Dane just announced that he's going to be doing stuff with Blue Wire for his Dane Moore NBA podcast. So how are both of you? It's great to see both of you again. Thank you for being part of this.
Subscribe to Dane's Patreon.
Hey, hi, guys. Thank you.
Subscribe. Patreon, pay his bills.
No, it's good. It's good to be back starting talking with you guys because that's, you know, I think for all, well, not you, Tim, but David and I is really where we first started, you know, doing podcasts consistently about the Timberwolves. And, you know, obviously life's weird like that and it kind of moves in different directions. And, you know, here it is, it's 2020 and everything's weird as hell and it's what I'm doing for a job. So it's, I have very fond memories of chatting with you guys. It was better when we could do it in person, but it's good to hang out for a little bit.
There are some advantages to the new setup, though. I mean, we get to just go back to what we're doing. And if you couldn't hear David, I'm going to say it again at the beginning here. I'll say it at the end. But Dane started a Patreon. It's patreon.com/DaneMoreNBA. I subscribed a couple days ago. Dane's podcast is... I mean, it's no Wolves Wired, but it's pretty damn good. No, it's a fantastic pod. The one you did with Britt just a couple days ago, one of my favorite listens so far this fall. Go check that out. But we are not here to talk about other podcasts. We're here to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. So I kind of want to just jump right in. And Dane, you were the first person I wanted to check in with. You've been at, as far as I know, every media availability so far. And thus far, I know D'Lo talked yesterday or 2 days ago. Ricky Rubio's been introduced. Ed Davis has been introduced. What are your impressions of the new guys so far? And also, like, what do you think about what Ryan and what Gerson have said about the new guys, specifically the rookie Anthony Edwards and then Ricky and Ed Davis? What have you gathered so far from them? Anything stick out?
Yeah, well, I think it's just really important whenever you think about the Timberwolves to think about how any new incoming piece, whether it be a coach or a front office or a player, you know, connects to Karl Anthony Towns. And we sort of have these new variables in the mix, right? With with Ricky Rubio and Anthony Edwards. And it's funny that I feel like Rubio is has become the main attraction related to that, whether it's just in the fan base or in these, you know, Zoom medias. But at the end of the day, the Timberwolves do not have enough talent, did not have enough talent on their team with a core of D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, and a bunch of guys, you know, making $5 million. So, you know, that's the question is how do you maximize your resources to surround Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell with, you know, the necessary talent? And what's fascinating, I think, about Edwards and Rubio is it's two extremely different paths to doing that. One being a 30-year-old and one being a 19-year-old, meaning, you know, Ricky's kind of already at what he is and Edwards is inherently an unknown. So it's been cool to hear, you know, I feel like we're gathering it. I don't think I have everything finalized in my head, but, you know, picturing what it's going to look like with Ricky Rubio on the floor with those guys. Where does Anthony Edwards fit? How does a player like Anthony Edwards fit with Karl Anthony Towns? Those are the questions not only that define the season, but to me, I think define whatever this next chapter of Timberwolves basketball is going to be. I mean, remember when back in the day when we used to always talk about there's kind of these two windows with the Tibbs era. You got like the first sort of window, right, with what when Tibbs came in with Jimmy and those guys. And then what's the next window going to be? This window, this is the window now. Like we're in that with this Cat, T-Lo, and what's on the roster group. And, you know, it's kind of do or die with this.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you're saying. And I think if one thing stuck out to me in terms of just sound bites I've seen thus far, Dan, I'm going to mention your podcast again. I think Britt Robson made a great observation or point when he talked about the potential for a little bit of unrest with D'Angelo Russell with the acquisition of Ricky Rubio and sure. How, I mean, D'Angelo Russell, he's made an all-star game. He's a 20-point-a-game scorer. He was traded for – I mean, he's got a max contract. He's supposed to be one of the two guys on the team. And then you bring in Ricky Rubio, who I know you remember Jeff Teague talking about him when he was brought in and Ricky Rubio was traded out. Like, it's just kind of a thing in the league. I think Minnesotans' love of Ricky Rubio is so intense that – if you're another point guard on the Timberwolves, specifically D'Angelo Russell, I could see how that could be a little disconcerting. And when he was asked about it, not only did he call him Rick, which was hilarious, yeah. he seemed to really embrace the idea of not just playing with a guy of with his passing ability, but playing with a guy that seems to lift off guards. He mentioned Devin Booker. He mentioned Donovan Mitchell. And that to me says a couple things. One, that he's open to the idea of playing off the ball, which is big because I think it seems clear that that's going to happen. And two, he doesn't seem put off by the idea of having a guy of Rubio's caliber on the team. And that might be Karl Anthony Towns just saying, hey, Ricky's cool. He's a good point guard, good playmaker, whatever have you. It might be D'Lo playing with the media, knowing how to speak to the media. But overall, I think – I don't know, that set off – that got it off to a good start in my mind in a scenario that could have gone another way initially.
Well, and Ricky said kind of the same thing in his comments, right? I don't remember if this was in his media comments or in the piece that John Krasinski had with him on The Athletic where they – like he talked about his feelings coming back where like Ricky talked about one of the things that's changed in the last 3 years since he left Minnesota and has come back is that he's had to learn how to play with – somewhat ball dominant scorers like Donovan Mitchell, like Devin Booker. And that's been a change in his game that like the best scorer that Ricky Rubio played with at the two on the Timberwolves was either Kevin Martin or second, third year Zach LaVine. And they are both guys who were more comfortable catching and shooting than they ever were on the ball, Zach in particular. So It's a skill development from Ricky that it's Timberwolves fans know and love Ricky Rubio. We've been over that storyline. It's one of the things that I think it could look different this time in some ways because there are things that Ricky's going to have learned in the last 3 years.
It's 100% going to look different. I mean, Ricky Rubio plays basketball different now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just That's just a fact. If you turn on a reel of not just highlights, actually probably don't watch highlights, but if actually watch a Timberwolves basketball game when he was playing for Tibbs or Sam Mitchell or Rick Adam, and you watch the way Ricky Rubio is used and uses himself, it looks extremely different than what he was doing under Quinn Snyder in Utah or what he was doing in Phoenix under Monty Williams. And really, this sounds weird to say, but Ricky took on more of a scoring role in mm-hmm. these last two steps where he was asked to shoot more. He was asked to shoot more, and that's just kind of what inherently happens when you're playing off ball a little bit more. And I'm interested to see how that kind of weaves together here with D'Angelo Russell and then obviously Karl Anthony Towns too. But it's going to be really important to put him in spots to score effectively, because he is going to not be in that pure point guard position all the time that we're used to, which does open up room for him to be quote unquote less productive in whether it's just shooting situations. We know he struggles getting to the rim. So you got to kind of like thread the needle there. But the good news is, to David's point, is that he has more experience in those type of situations and has just objectively gotten better at that element of his game. So yeah, there are going to be things they're going to have to figure out. Of course, anybody is going to be adjustment playing with Karl-Anthony Towns. Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't play like really anybody else in the NBA. And he plays different than what he did when Ricky was here too. So yeah, I think there's going to be some time there, but I certainly don't like – I don't view it as like square peg, round hole or anything like that with Ricky fitting right. this team.
And I would also say that, like, initially – I know it's bare bones numbers, but I look at Rubio's time in Minnesota and I look at things like shot attempts and I look at assist numbers. And when he left – Minnesota, his last year with Minnesota, he averaged a career high in assists, 9.1. Instantly goes to Utah, where you've got more of a variety of ways to score, and just Quinn Snyder coaches differently and used Ricky differently, to your guys' point. His assist numbers dropped to 5.3. Like, they were almost cut in half. Last year, they went up again, but still, like, again, you mentioned it, but you watch a Suns game, Ricky Rubio isn't driving up or bringing the ball up, DeAndre Ayton setting a screen, and then offense is initiating. Like, it almost reminded me of, this is going to be a weird comparison, but like Jeff Teague on those Atlanta teams. Jeff Teague brought the ball up, but he wasn't like initiating the offense most of the time. His assists might still be up because he's a good passer. Ricky Rubio averaged almost 9 assists a game last year because he's a great passer.
The Cat Horford example probably works there too. They ran a lot through Horford too in Atlanta.
Exactly, you know? Right. Yep.
And with Kat, yeah, I actually kind of like that.
So on that note, we kind of already touched on it. Is Ricky Rubio going to start? I've been going through this in my head since Edwards was taken, since Rubio was traded for. Initially, when the Rubio trade went down on draft night, I was convinced that either Malik Beasley was going elsewhere, that Jarrett Culver was going elsewhere, that Jake Layman was going elsewhere. One or two of those guys were gone. But as of now, everyone I mentioned still on the roster. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell still on the roster. Josh Okogie still on the roster. I think you can say with a lot of certainty that Juancho Hernangómez is going to be the starting four. You can say with 100% certainty that D'Lo and Cat will start. So that's 3/5 of the starting lineup. These are two different questions, but who, in your mind, who would you start? This is obviously for either of you. And what do you think the opening day starting lineup is actually going to look like? I've been struggling with this for a while, and I just don't have an answer yet.
Go ahead, David.
It's such a good question, because like we know that in last year, how many games did Beasley even play after the trade? Like,
14.
We haven't.
Yeah,
it was
14.
Four, so, like, less than 15 games, tremendously small sample size, and he was starting all that time. But, like, that was also where he could start with Josh Okogie, who I think, like, last year, Ryan's preferred starting three was Josh Okogie for much of the time. So, like, you can't bring Beasley off the bench now. It's you've got like seven pieces for a five slot thing. So, like, I think to the Ryan question, it feels like you, if you go by the NBA money rules, you start Ricky, D'Lo, Beasley, Wancho, and Cat. Like, that feels like if you just look at, like, the salary numbers, that's the lineup you start, because those are your, I think, your five most highly paid guys. They almost have to be. Mm-hmm. But, like, I could see an argument for, depending on matchups, starting Josh instead of Malik and just making rotations. Dude, Ryan's rotation is going to be so interesting to watch this year, because you do have all these lineups you can do. You can put a more defensive lineup out there with Josh and see what you've got. You can say, like, Anthony Edwards has said he's going to work his butt off on defense, so can you put Edwards and Okogie out there? Like, Edwards, Okogie, Rubio. And, like, that's three plus defenders at all their positions, at all the guard positions. But, like, I think probably the most likely lineup to start is Malik Beasley at the three and Ricky starting with him. Dane, what do you think?
Well, yeah, Tim, you put it right. Like, what would I do versus what do I think will mm-hmm. happen?
I think those are probably going to be very different.
Those yeah. And no, that's not to say, like, whatever, we're smarter or anything. Ricky Rubio is not going to start. I think that is a place where if you want to have realistic conversations about this, is you start there where Rubio comes off the bench. And, you know, that's just from some of the conversations I've had. That I think entering training camp, that is the plan. Obviously, you know, there's going to be room to kind of, to your point, David, there's like 7-8 guys who you could kind of put in the mix. They're going to have to try and figure that out. But as you enter training camp, if you're setting odds on it, I would say it's like an 80-90% chance that Rubio does not start. So to me, that leaves us with four spots locked in. D'Lo, Cat, of course, Wancho at the four, and Beasley, probably to David's money point, will be the fourth starter there. The fifth becomes a question of, one, do you want to put Rubio into that role? And play alongside those guys. He's the best player to start there, but that doesn't necessarily make it the best option. And then you have the number one overall pick rule. Number one overall picks usually start, but it is a pandemic. There's a shortened training camp. Edwards is as raw as any number one overall pick ever. He's probably the least ready to just jump into an NBA starting role. And then the third option, I think, is Josh Okogie. And that's kind of where you're going to have to pick and choose. I'm, again, going off the assumption that I think it won't be Rubio, because they're going to try and stagger as much as they can mm-hmm. the D'Lo and Rubio minutes. It becomes an Edwards and Okogie question. I will say I don't think it matters. Like, we're going to make a big deal over who the starters are, and I understand that is it matters to players and all this and that. But, David, you touched on the main thing. It's about Ryan Saunders and how he effectively manages the rotations. Like,
it's about the rotations way more than it's about the starting lineup.
Way more.
So much more.
We're so used to, like, I mean, since really, you know, whatever, call it, like, the past 5 years that the three of us have really been, like, focusing on this team on a day-to-day basis, you know, the benches have just been so terrible that we've just kind of passed on the idea of, like, getting value out of your bench rotation. It's basically been, like, don't kill us, you know. Can we just lose this 6 minutes by only three? That would be a win.
Shout out to Shabazz Muhammad.
sure. Like, but now through pairing up defensive pairings or offensive pairings or Rubio with whoever, Edwards with whoever, like, who do you want to stick together? That's how you end up having a potential to gain value once you get into your bench there, and how you finagle, you know, obviously everybody's going to be better when they're playing with Cat. We saw that with Culver last year. But when Culver wasn't with Cat, it was awful. When Culver and Okogie played together with Cat, that was, like, okay, because Cat's that good. But you play Okogie and Culver together without Cat, it's the worst possible ever. Mm-hmm. So it's – particularly in a shortened season, when every game inherently carries more weight, that there is, like, an opportunity for Ryan Saunders to gain – multiple wins or lose multiple wins by solving this riddle that isn't easy. I don't think it's an easy riddle to solve.
No. And it's what, yeah, I think you nailed it. The thing I keep coming back to, so let's assume you're right. Rubio comes off the bench. in terms of rotation, they've already talked about it, but they're definitely going to be staggering the point guard position. They're also going to be playing together a little bit, which will take a few minutes away from Edwards, Beasley, Culver, mm-hmm. Layman, some form of that combination. But in terms of the starting lineup, the thing I keep coming back to is just, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. If you've looked at the numbers a little bit more than I have, please correct me. What I remember most about Josh Okogie are the moments when he came off the bench and provided a spark. And I'm not necessarily just talking about when he was a rookie and his name was getting chanted in the Target Center and Tibbs would like just ignore it because he's Tibbs and not playing. But when he started, there were moments where, you know, he was great. He got the James Harden block. I don't remember if he started that game or not. But solid defender, good energy guy. I've just kind of come to the conclusion that at this point, unless his jumper makes big strides, that he might be a better fit as an energy guy off the bench. And
can I jump in there, Tim?
Sure. Of course. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think it's interesting because he could fit into two different roles. He could be the energy guy off the bench, right? Mm-hmm. And that would make sense. I think you're right there. But what he could also do, kind of given his game, is be the low usage fifth guy. Like those are particularly, you know what I'm saying? Like if you have D'Lo and Cat, who are going to be these high usage guys, you know, Malik's going to get his shots. Like you kind of want to play a fifth guy who's just going to not really need the ball.
I've got a point here, and you're on the same track I am, because I don't know if this is going to be called a hot take or not, but this is where my head has gone. I love the idea of Anthony Edwards and Ricky Rubio being a couple pieces that come off the bench and just provide an additional spark, a scoring spark. Rubio scoring spark, obviously in a different way than Edwards is. And I love the idea of Okogie running with those guys off the bench. I think that's a pretty strong bench, at least in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. But that still leaves an open spot in the starting lineup. And the name that I think kind of falls by the wayside because he's just a less sexy name, he's less interesting, is Jake Layman. And
I knew
terms
you were
of,
saying, I'm waiting for this.
In terms of low usage fifth guys, I think Layman fits pretty well. I know he's not paid as well, to David's point, and maybe that makes a difference. I'm not sure it does in Ryan Saunders' mind. But in terms of a guy that you can start the game with, a guy that can score, can get into or get at the rim. And as far as I've seen, I guess I haven't watched enough Jake Layman because he was hurt last year. He seems like a solid defender, a good defender. And if you want to have that really strong spark off the bench, he's the one that I've kind of come to the conclusion that I'd like to see start. I think Okogie and Beasley are going to be the two starters on day one. That's just a guess. It's an experience thing. Mm-hmm. Part of it's a money thing, but that means that all five guys from last year's roster are in the starting lineup. There's a little bit of familiarity there. Granted, Cat and D'Lo only played one game together. I think familiarity matters on day one, especially in a shortened season. Bringing in Ricky, he's kind of a human super glue. I think he fits pretty well into anything. Edwards is a little bit more of a question mark. So that's where my head goes. That's what I think will happen. But Layman's just a guy that I think would be interesting as the fifth starter. And I still think you can use interesting rotations with Layman as the fifth star, because I don't think he necessarily needs to play the fifth most or anything like that. I think Edwards could certainly play quite a bit at the three. Okogie could play more. Sort of like Irvin Johnson, if we want to kick it back to 04, if you want to do it that way.
I think Trevion Graham is a more recent example than Irvin
much,
Johnson.
Much more recent example.
No, but seriously, I think I know you're saying that's maybe what you would do, but if we are drawing on – past Saunders decisions, like, we did the same thing. We had the same conversation last year. Who's going to be the fifth starter?
Mm-hmm. And, good point.
And I remember I wrote something, and I think it was, you know, it considered, considered Layman, considered if it was going to be Culver, considered if it would be Noah Vonleh, considered if it would be Jordan Bell. And then, like, I went through all the options and, like, pros and cons. And then, sure enough, day one, he goes with Trevion Graham, mm-hmm. kind of out of nowhere, but for the reasons that you're bringing up. Because he is that low usage guy, because the reason Ryan did it, and maybe it wasn't the right move, I don't know, Trevion Graham was kind of bad, but it was because he could get what he expected. Like, Trevin Graham was going to do what Ryan told him to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, spot up, take those threes, play your ass off. You're going to defend the point of attack. Like, if you give Jake Layman four things to do, he's going to do them. He's not going to blow you away with them, but maybe it, to your point, in the fifth role, the fifth spot, like, that's just what you need.
Yeah, and I think you hit it towards the end there. I don't know how good Trevion Graham is. Jake Layman had come in with a two-year deal immediately. So, I think Jake Layman is just a better basketball player than Trevion Graham and would do better, but I completely forgot about that debate. You're 100% right. That was 100% a thing. The complexion of the roster has obviously changed. Last year's roster included Robert Covington, Andrew Wiggins, and Jeff Teague. This year's roster does not. So I'm curious to see how that works out. And last year, if I recall, there were questions about whether Rocco was going to be a three or a four, which is why people like Jordan Bell or Noah Vonleh were being brought up. It's very clearly a wing player this year, which slims down the options a little bit. Unless Wancho isn't a guarantee. I think we're all assuming he's probably a set as the four. That's the only way I could see something crazy happening. But I expect Wancho to start at the four to start the year.
David, what do you think, and you too, Tim, what do you think the closing lineup will be? Because I think that is ultimately kind of gets to the question that kind of ties in both. It's the starters with the rotation kind of thing that we're highlighting. And quite frankly, it just matters more, you know?
Yeah, like it's I was thinking about this. When you have a close game, 6 minutes left, the clutch time example, like what is your clutch time lineup?
Sure.
It's like, because I think just you can make the offense defense subs, you can do all these things. It feels like, is it better to have Ricky and D'Lo together at in clutch time just so you have your best tools on the floor at the same time?
I would say so.
Like, I think that makes sense to me.
But people will cite how bad Ricky's clutch numbers were here in those situations. No, I think that's like kind of overblown. I think the team just sucked at the in the last 5 minutes of games. Like, I think they were just,
I admittedly have not looked at his clutch numbers in Phoenix, but they can't have been that bad, right? Particularly in the bubble.
I wouldn't think so. I think
when you really need to hone in on Ricky Rubio's clutch numbers, because Ricky Rubio's putting up enough clutch plays to have clutch numbers, I mean, I think that's part of the issue, right? Like this time around, he's got at least two guys ahead of him that should be taking shots. So yes, I agree.
But I think he's definitely in there. I mean, I think it's definitely in the closing lineup. Jico, D'Lo, and Rubio are both the pieces there because I don't know. I mean, but Rubio's the fourth best player on the team. Like, you probably want to close maybe the third, you know. You want to close the game, you know, with your best players. And I think, you know, Beasley, you put him in there at the three. Obviously, Cat at the five. And now our question, I think, kind of shifts more up to the four. Do you want to have Wancho out there who's going to provide offense in the form of space in the floor through three-point shooting? Or I'm telling you, man, and I don't think people believe this, but Josh Okogie is going to play the four this year. And I think that is the type of spot where you can put him in. You know, Josh, kind of like what Tim was saying, he's giving you that energy that night. He has been that spark, whatever role he was in. And you kind of roll with him and you just have him like play the whole fourth quarter. He was in initially with the second unit, but then you just ride it out because he's having a game. He's making plays. And I think if you have him out there with D'Lo and Beasley and Cat, you already have three really good offensive options, three really good shooters. If Rubio's able to be like a decent catch and shoot guy, it doesn't kill you if you have one guy out there who can't shoot, so long as he's providing, you know, other things. You're not gonna be able to do it against the Lakers, but there's a lot of teams where, you know, you can get by, I think, with Josh at the four, just because other teams' fours aren't like going to be like, okay, mouse in the house, like let's post up Josh Okogie. Now go away from their whole offense. Like that just doesn't happen in the NBA.
I don't know. This might be a cop-out answer. I think it's going to depend on two things, and I assume this is what Ryan Saunders would say, but it's going to depend on who's playing well at the time and matchups. If you're playing Philadelphia and they have Dwight Howard, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid on the floor at the same time, you're not putting Josh Okogie at the four. You might have Ed Davis out there. You might have Wancho out there. I think a lot of it's going to depend on Ricky Rubio's three-point shooting went up last year. It was, what, 35%, something like that, like an acceptable number.
41 on catch and shoots.
See, 41 yep. on catch and shoots. Beautiful. If he's doing that, he's going to close every game. Yeah. If those numbers don't hold, I think he falls back into the conversation of do you close with him or do you not close with him. I think Beasley, D'Lo, and Cat are pretty set in stone closing players. Right. I think a lot of it will depend otherwise on who you're playing, and I think it's going to depend on how you're playing. If Anthony Edwards surprises and plays way better than expected out of the gate and is playing like Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker, in their rookie years, of course, he's going to close more games. If Wancho's just bricking everything, maybe Ed Davis is closing a game. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm generalizing too much. I like coaches that don't have a set closing lineup every game. Tom Thibodeau had a set closing lineup every game. Ryan Saunders, I think, is a little bit more willing to switch it up depending on who's playing well. I think we have three guys that are set in stone and probably four. And this kind of comes back to the same thing with the starting lineup. It's a different conversation, but I think the fifth guy is a little bit of a wild card every game. Josh Okogie will probably I like the idea of him playing some four. I think Wancho is going to be in there sometimes, and Edwards is going to have a hot game in there where he's going to close the game too. Right. That's where my head goes.
Goes back to finding the, like, what Ryan's got to do is, I don't think it's about, you know, to use the stat thing, I don't think it's about what your five-man lineups are. I think it's about finding two- and three-man groups that find effectiveness through being an all-offense group, through being an all-defense group, through being, somewhere in the middle sort of group. Like, those are the buttons that Ryan's going to have to push. And really, I'm interested to see how he does. He's never really had the opportunity to do that. Every one of those has been like, oh, okay, now the third guy is Jared Bayless. Oh, the third guy is, Trevion Graham, whatever. Like, he's finally got, 10 guys that seem like competent rotation players on the team.
We haven't talked about Jarrett Culver at all in this rotation.
That was going to be my final question on the rotation. There is not room for – unless we're going way small at the four, Wancho's a four, and Ed Davis is strictly a five, which is possible.
Which I would say, Tim, I think Davis is a five.
Like, strictly Davis, a five. Never going to play with Cat.
I mean, going off of last year And Davis has played five too. Like, that's was his role last year in Utah. Like,
yep,
I'm not saying he can't play power four, but if we look at the ways that the Wolves have utilized the bigs, it's like he doesn't really fit into what they've done at power forward, unless it's like they kind of dinked around with Jordan Bell at the four a little bit. Maybe there's some of that. I mean, Jordan Bell played a lot against the Lakers, maybe situationally, but generally speaking, I'm entering the season viewing Ed Davis as the backup five.
Okay, so let's assume that. I don't have like a lineup card in front of me, but let's pretend Davis is strictly a five. That means, again, to your point, a wing player is going to play the four, whether it's Okogie, Lehman, Edwards, some guy that isn't traditionally a four, or even in this new age of NBA positionless basketball is going to play a four on a traditional NBA roster. Does that make room for Jarrett Culver? I don't know if it does still, because you're still playing Jake Lehman. You're still playing Josh Okogie, Malik Beasley. Anthony Edwards is going to get at least, even if he's not good right away, he's going to get 15 minutes a game. Unless he's just atrocious, which I don't see happening. All of those guys, Ricky Rubio is going to get minutes at the one with D'Lo at the two. Where does that leave Culver? I think one of you tweeted about it. Is Jarrett Culver going to play?
I mean, honestly, who's making the rotation decisions? Is it Gershon Rosas? Is it Ryan Saunders? And we've seen that in the NBA before. We don't really know how that exactly works with Gershon and Ryan, but it's not like it's unprecedented that a front office has say on playing the guy that they spent a first round pick on. And I'm not saying like Ryan is against Jared. I don't really know, but if he starts end up kind of finding a rhythm where he's like, oh, this is my 8-9 man unit or guys that I'm playing and Culver isn't in there, is there going to be pressure, to put him in there over, somebody who they're not as committed to? there is value as well in developing Jarrett Culver. So this kind of goes back to the whole starting lineup thing. Is it what we would do, or is it what we
think? Exactly right.
Well, you know, will happen. Culver, I mean, last year was a bummer, and he's going to get the chance to play some, and where is he at mentally? You know, where mm-hmm. how does he string that together? That's how he defines his minutes. He's going to get his shot, but if he comes off looking similar to what he did last year, Ryan Saunders, who's going to be trying to push his team towards the playoffs, mm-hmm. will not be incentivized to just roll him out there over like a Jake Layman, who, you know, it's just, you kind of more so know what you're going to get, which is at least like 50% of your free throws made.
Yep. If the Wolves weren't going to play Jarrett Culver this year, based on the moves that they've made, I think there would have been a much more, much stronger attempt to trade him this offseason. And that seems to not be happening.
That's the tea leaf for sure.
Which, yeah, I think he's going to play. I don't know if that means they're just going to play an 11-man lineup and it's a shortened season. We're in COVID. In soccer, yeah, they were doing like 5-6 subs a game or whatever, as opposed to 3. Maybe in basketball, the new thing is going to be fewer minutes for players and just deeper rotations. I don't know. I think he's going to play, to answer my own question. I don't know how much. I think in terms of what I was talking about before, he is probably the most likely to play his way out of the rotation if he continues to shoot poorly.
But he could also get better.
The line poorly. He could also – exactly right. If his
it's not like a high bar.
Yeah. His shooting is at – in terms of bars, yeah, it's at the floor right now. He – if his free throw shooting goes up to 65% and he's a – below average three-point shooter suddenly, but he still got the handle he had, and he's, you know, his finishing wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
He's a good defensive option too.
Yeah, exactly right. There's value in that. Mm-hmm. And if they decide eventually that Ricky, Russell, Beasley, and Edwards are the backcourt group going forward, mm-hmm. they need to play him to trade him. Otherwise his value is going to go out the window. So if nothing else, they need to play him just to boost his value a little bit for the trade deadline or for next offseason. Like, he needs to play if he's going to be on the team for that alone, unless they're just going to cut off his team option at the end of the year.
I've been as hard as anyone has on Jarrett Culver, but what I will say is a lot of that is judged by just watching the tape, watching him play, the way he plays and the way he seems to, you know, kind of carry himself when he's out there, a little bit nervous. But David, if you wrote, like, actually dig through the, like, lineup data, the net ratings, like a lot of guys' best two-man pairing or what some of their best three-man groups, like Jarrett Culver is involved in those. And DeAndre Russell, it's super small. It was like 119 minutes, I think, but his best two-man pairing was with Jarrett Culver. Like, and it's hard because they're all so small, but you can find things where you're like, well, it doesn't look very good, but there were some results in the time that Culver played together.
Well, and that's the thing we have to remember about all of this. With Culver, with the guys who have been here and the guys who haven't, we've had 14 games of seeing like half of this roster kind of play together. We don't have any real idea how this clicks together, even with the guys that are here. Like, we made sure. the concrete we know is like Josh Okogie and Kat can play together. That's the only two-man lineup in this entire team that we have real sample size for in the last 5 years.
Maybe Watro and Malik a little bit, but that's in different places and stuff.
A different team. Like, we have to remember that a little bit. And, like, it's we can prognosticate and project, but we barely have data to go off of for this, for anybody.
That's why it's about – I mean, that's what I think is kind of fun about it is you can't really come into an argument or a conversation with this with a sword made out of like cleaning the glass numbers, you know, like you've kind of got to be like, this is how this guy plays. And, you know, in my interpretation, those type of two players would go well together or would go well with this point guard. And those, those are to me, are the more fun questions to have. They're more of a, it's more of a riddle, and it's more of a basketball question, you know? And it's something I think we're going to have to go through, because we're going to start jumping on conclusions after 5-10 games. But historically, none of that stuff really starts to stick out in any sort of meaningful way. I always say until like 20 games into the season, that's when you can, then you can start coming to me with lineup data and be like, oh, okay, like I see that this pairing has been effective. And I guess that kind of like craps on my point of Culver's pairings before, but it's just, there's like less of a grain of salt if we actually see these guys play for more than the 14 games that they played together last year or what have you.
How about we go even smaller? Sorry, what's that?
That's my last take. I'm going to miss seeing Naz Reid minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to get those.
I don't think
maybe
so either.
Maybe in Iowa. Maybe you'll be able to see some Naz Reid minutes, true. David.
Jared Vanderbilt party in Iowa. It's going to be great.
The biggest question mark guy. I want to write about how I know absolutely nothing about Jared Vanderbilt, yet find myself excited about him still for some reason. Anyway, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole.
He's jacked.
He's very strong. He's no Andrew Wiggins, but he's very strong.
Thank you for your Photoshop of Andrew Wiggins with like barrel-sized biceps earlier today. That was great.
What do you mean? What Photoshop? Isn't that just him?
It is him. That wasn't a photo. He just posed again.
Hey, let's talk about we were talking about pairings and small sample sizes. And in terms of the pairing with maybe the smallest sample size of guys that have actually played together are the two best players on the team. D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. Is there, I just based on watching them play basketball, I don't see a scenario where they don't gel fairly well together offensively. Not just the fact that they're friends. They're both excellent shooters. D'Lo's a good passer. Cat's an improved,
I don't give a shit about any of that. Like, I mean, sorry, I'm cutting you off, but it's going to be so good. And I think you guys both know me enough to be like, I'm not somebody who's just out here like pumping Timberwolves air into the tires. Like, that's not me. This pairing of Cat and D'Lo is going to be so much better than what I like when I put my finger to the wind and like hear what people talk about this team. Like, those two, look at the dudes that D'Angelo Russell has played with in his career. They suck. There's I'm pulling this up here right now. These are the guards who D'Angelo Russell has played with most in his career.
Dane, you can cut me off anytime. You're just gonna pump this up. That's fine.
No, this is it's crazy. These are the guards D'Angelo Russell played with most in his career. Rookie year, Jordan Clarkson and Kobe Bryant. Farewell tour, Kobe Bryant. Next year, Nick Young, Jordan Clarkson. By the way, the net rating with Jordan Clarkson in 721 minutes was -18.5.
That's pretty
bad. Then he goes to Brooklyn and he plays, his two guys he plays with most are Alan Crabb and like rookie year Caris LeVert. After that, he goes and he plays with Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert. Kind of competent rotation players. Last year in Golden State, the two guards he played with most are Damian Lee and Jordan Poole. That's terrible. It's so terrible. And the bigs are like Roy Hibbert, Timofey Mozgov, Julius Randle, like Willie Cauley-Stein on the Warriors. He hasn't played with rotation players in his career. And man, I watched all of it. I see the defense looks so stupid. Like, I see that with D'Angelo Russell, man. But you got to put it in context of, like, he's playing with good players now, decent players now. Ricky Rubio's a good guard. Malik Beasley's a good guard. Well, in comparison to those names, I mean, it's
so,
gonna
hey,
work.
Hey, hold on. I'm cutting you off now.
Okay.
Malik Beasley averaged, what, 20 a game last year? He played well enough to get the contract he has now because of those 14 games.
Sure.
What percentage of that – I'm letting you build on your point here. What percentage of that is because – D'Lo is good at building other guys up?
Yeah, I mean, I think,
like, how reliant is Malik Beasley on a guy like D'Lo giving him space? And to that point, when he has Kat and D'Lo and Ricky, for that matter, another guy that can build other players up, how good in your guys' mind is D'Lo not just at scoring and being a good basketball player and being better because of players around him? How much better is he making other people? Does that make sense?
Yeah, he will give space to guys to get going. Like, he in that way is a point guard. And he did that. I think in Brooklyn, he did that. And those were when he was playing with competent guys. It's like, that's when Dinwiddie started getting some momentum. That's when LeVert started getting some momentum. And that was in part due to D'Lo. I'm not even saying he's like this, like an elite passer or something, but he has this recognition of like the rhythm of a basketball game. It's like, Malik's going off right now. Like, I'm going to let that happen. And I think that's, he isn't like a, we got to pass the baton. I got to have it now for these, this quarter. Like, I do think he's a point guard at heart who will play basketball in a way that will lead to winning. He like understands that path.
And that means with the exception of Jimmy Butler, D'Lo will become the best player the Cats ever played with. And on top of that, he will now be playing in a system that's going to feature Karl Anthony Towns as opposed to just kind of have him on the side. Like, Karl Anthony Towns made the All-Star game in the year that Jimmy Butler was on his team, but like, you both watched it. We were hosting a podcast together that year. Carl's offensive output was not what it probably should have been. And it's not going to be what it is this year. So together, hopefully in an ideal world, the two of them kind of explode offensively, considering they're actually going to be featured properly together. I don't see how it doesn't.
I just don't see how that doesn't
exactly
happen. And that's not to say the defense is going to be any good. I just feel like the current perception of D'Angelo Russell as we sit here in the beginning of December compared to what the perception of D'Angelo Russell is going to be come whenever like the All-Star break is this year is going to be so different. I think he's going to get a chance to actually show something this year and have and do so in an infrastructure that balances him out. And I mean, he's the guy, if I'm betting, like if I'm buying stock in someone on this team compared to what, where I understand the market to be, I'm betting on D'Angelo Russell.
Good segue. This is going to be the last thing we do. We should wrap it up here. David, you sent us the player props for the year. And to close this podcast out, I want a rapid fire. Basically, we're going to find out who we're buying stock in, at least numerically, for what amount. So I'm just going to, it's points per game. For those that don't know, it's an over under of points per game, rebounds, assists, et cetera, for various players that are going to be playing this year. And these are the lines that they are at. So I don't want us to necessarily spend a whole bunch of time unless one of these numbers is insanely interesting.
I think there are two that are insanely interesting.
What's that?
I think there are two that are insanely interesting.
Well, maybe we'll deep dive into those. We'll see. Okay. First one here. Over under for points per game for Karl Anthony Towns at 26.5. What do you guys got?
You go first, David.
I got under.
Okay, so I'm pulling it up. What did he average last year? 26.5, so they just did his exact number. I mean, yeah, because this goes to the Malik point that we were talking about before. It's like, I don't like when people say this, there's not going to be enough basketballs to go around, but Cat got all the basketballs last year. You know what I'm saying?
Every single one.
And, you know, to that extent, like, I think an issue that is going to come this year is Malik not, like, accepting being not the number one or number two option. Because there will be some cannibalization, I think, in Malik and in Cat in that way. I think both of them are kind of the opposite of what I was talking about with the whole rhythm thing with D'Lo, right? Like, where they're kind of like, oh, things aren't working, time for me to go get it myself. And I'm interested to see the dynamic of those two play together, who played two games together last year. But yeah, I don't see how Cat can score more than he did last year. So I guess under.
With this, there are going to be more buckets coming from other places than there have at basically any other point in his career in Minnesota.
Right.
I think his points will go down, and I don't think that's a bad thing for the team.
Not at all.
All right. The next one is Karl Anthony Towns rebounds per game. The number is 11.5. So last year he averaged 10.8. But the 3 years prior, he averaged over 12.
Right.
I'm looking at the team. I'm looking at the complexion of the roster. I don't see a lot of rebounders on this team. Obviously, Kat and Ed Davis are good rebounders. Juancho's okay. Ricky Rubio's a solid defender at his position, as is D'Angelo Russell. I see him going over that number. I don't. If nothing else, he will average more rebounds per game than he did last year. That's my
why. Here's a question: why did he average less rebounds last season?
It's a great question. I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
It's not like he was with some rebounding behemoth in Robert Covington next to him.
Well, if I remember correctly, and I might not be. I remember Robert Covington's rebounds going up at the beginning of last year. Like, I remember a couple, maybe it was preseason. I could be way off, but I remember Robert Covington with a couple, like, insane, at least relative to him, rebounding games to start the year. And then he got traded. And then Cat got hurt. So I don't know.
I do remember that too.
You had Noah Vonleh. You had Jordan Bell last year. Like, you had bigger guys that could go up and get rebounds.
But they didn't play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
You're right.
I think a part of why this rebounding went down, as I now think to answer my own question, is he's playing out five out the whole time, right? So he's losing. I'm sure – I don't have a stat in front of me, but I'm sure his offensive rebounds went down last year in that sense. And then I think there was also in their uber-conservative defensive scheme, you know, just some more incentive to kind of get back. I think it's very important defensively for this year that Karl-Anthony Towns does rebound back at his level of, you know, that 12 a game in previous years.
His offensive rebound numbers are pretty consistent. 2 years ago, the Jimmy Butler madness year, his offensive rebounds went up to 3.4, but he averaged 2.7 last year and 2.9 2 years ago.
Half the drop. Yeah.
Yeah. So offensively, he was basically down a full rebound per game.
Right.
On the defensive rebounds.
Yeah. I don't know. I would say over because I think there's going to be a serious like impetus on him defensive rebounding. I think that's a way that this team gets better defensively is to clean up possessions, or as a group at least, to rebound better.
And there's more guys that you can run out on the break. If his job is more to crash the glass and let Rubio or Russell or Edwards
get out
and go, that might be the play. Maybe it's like Kevin Love from back in the day. Get the rebound and just fling it up the court. I don't know.
I agree with you guys. Like, I think that Cat's going to have a lot of rebounds this year. I think it's going to bounce back for sure.
Yeah.
All right. D'Angelo Russell, 22.5 points per game.
You got a take on that, David? I'm pulling up his stats.
He averaged 21.7 last year with the Wolves, 23.6 with the Warriors. And then his 1 year with Brooklyn, in 2018 with Brooklyn, he averaged 21.1. So those are his three 20-plus point scoring years. So this
and the number is 22.5 this year?
The numbers, so yeah, about an average between his time in Golden State and Minnesota from last year.
That feels really big.
Yeah, I'm going under there too.
Okay, so but to be clear though, we just talked about how we think he might blow up a little this year offensively or at least play better. But he's going to his numbers in terms of just pure scoring. I know that doesn't necessarily indicate efficiency.
In terms of bare numbers,
that's an average of what he had last year without Cat.
Yeah, I guess I just think my point of where it blows up is that, like, I do think the Wolves are going to be like a top five offense as a whole. And like the instigator behind that is going to be the Cat and D'Lo pairing. That will open everything up. I think that is an extremely dynamic pick and roll combination to just come down and start every possession with. So now we're opening up, you know, secondary actions for whether it's Lehman on a back cut, whether it's Rubio in a second side pick and roll, like those sort of things. It just, everything else around that initial pick and roll action, which is in itself is going to be good, like I think becomes easier, which theoretically opens up more scoring for everyone else. And honestly, I think for David and I both, maybe speak for you, I think a reason why I'm taking under on both these guys is because I think Malik Beasley is just going to shoot a ton. And like, that's going to be something to navigate there as well. And Anthony Edwards too, man. Anthony Edwards played like Malik Beasley at Georgia. So,
and this is the whole thing. Like, if we look, one of the things that's going to be really interesting to track this year is like percentage of team shots, right? Like, we've been watching that with Cat for his entire damn career, right? Cat's not getting enough shots. Cat's not getting enough bites of the apple, whatever have you. Where this year, like, the percentage of shots that goes to D'Lo and Cat as opposed to Beasley, Lehman, Edwards, Okogie, like all these guys that are going to be getting the passes from the passing and distributing and initiating part of the team. I think that there are going to be more shots to go around for the everybody else core. Like, how many catch and shoots is Jake Layman going to get in a given year? Like, if he's playing with playing off the D-Lo, the D-Lo cat pick and roll, if he's playing with Ricky off the bench and just gets a cut and gets open. Right. I think there's going to be chances for other guys to increase their shots.
Right. I'm with that.
I'm still taking the over. I think he's going to – I think he and Kat are going to be fairly neck and neck in terms of who leads the team in scoring. And I think D'Lo is going to – I think D'Lo is going to put up more points, and I'm going to get to another guy's name in a minute. I think Malik Beasley's numbers are going to go down to a point that might anger some fans considering the number of dollars that he just received. I could be wrong.
I think that the question, man, is you're going to have to convince Malik to do that. Yep. I agree that's what should happen, of course. Like, of course, it's Kat and D'Lo should be the ones. It's just, I don't know, man. We watched this 14 games of Malik, and that dude.
I'll put it this way. Is D'Angelo Russell going to be the one that you're going to have to convince? Or, I'm sorry, is Malik Beasley going to be the one that you're going to have to convince? Or is D'Lo going to be one of the two star players and be able to make that decision on his own? I don't know. It might be.
Probably both. Match.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's Malik's number? What's the overall?
That's the next one I'm going to. So I'm going to jump around a little bit. We don't have to get into all of these. Malik Beasley's is at 16.
Malik Bleepley is a pretty good one for him this week.
16.5 points per game.
Okay. David, you go.
Yeah, I'm over. Thinking. Over?
Over.
Yeah.
I'm struggling. I think he's going to be right on that line. Like 15,
yeah, it's fair. It's a fair line.
Is about what I'm expecting. Yeah. I don't think he's going to average 20 like he did in those 14 games with the Wolves. I just don't see it happening with Kat and D'Lo playing every game. But he's going to have 20-point nights, but I don't see him being a 20-point-per-game scorer. I think 15-16 just sounds right to me.
That's probably fair. I'm definitely buying the Beasley stock this year, so I'm going to commit to it with the pick.
That's a risky stock to buy, David.
I know.
On-court stock.
How many times have I taken the Wolves' win total over in the last 6 years?
How many times have you won?
What was the number you picked the year we covered the team all at that 50, one place?
50? Like,
no. Oh, 50?
And then they win 48?
It was 50 or 51, and everybody laughed me out of the room.
Yeah, that's close. Right.
You were. I think the Malik Beasley thing is the in like how that fits. Again, everything ties back to Kat and everything ties back to D'Lo. That's a really important one. How does Malik effectively tie himself to Kat and D'Lo? And really, the answer is the best way to do that is to be a better defender. And you know, he's saying the right sort of things about that, but I mean, the defense is bad on Beasley. Like, you go back and you look at the way he played. I remember just like at the deadline going back and watching some Denver stuff, and it's funny. He's always out there with Michael Porter Jr., and it looked exactly the same. It's that same, like, I'm processing this at a slower rate than everyone else on the floor is, other than Michael. We're both on dial up, you know? Like, that's what it looked like. And I think Malik has has some of the athleticism to handle it. He is very small, though. I don't think people really get that he's like, he's this really skinny dude. And I'm curious of what his even defensive upside is, because I think hitting that and that level being kind of high is how like the Kat, D'Lo, Beasley core is raised. It's not by Malik taking, you know, 19 shots in a game like that. They don't need that.
So what you're saying is you're not buying Malik saying first team all D. You're not buying that.
I'm not, but buy into that end. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if focus in there. I mean, I think Malik wants to win. I do. Like, I think he was trying to get paid, and he did. And I believe both things are true. I think he wanted to get paid, and I think he wants to win. I think he's a really competitive guy. The whole, like, picture he has of the Larry O'Brien trophy in his locker is a little cliche, but I think that's like I do think that's what drives him. I don't think he just wants to be a high paid guy who gets 20 a game. Like, he wants to be a guy who is an important cog in a good team. And for him to do that, he doesn't need to be the 20 point guy. He just doesn't need to.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, Malik Beasley and Anthony Edwards, about the same height, maybe give or take an inch. Anthony Edwards weighs 40 pounds more than Malik Beasley. And Anthony Edwards is built like a brick house. So that's part
of
it.
And he's 19.
Yeah, exactly. Malik Beasley has about 5-6 years on Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards weighs 40 pounds more.
What does it have Malik listed at? In
187.
I'm telling you, he didn't weigh that much when he was here last year.
That's probably true. All right. We got two more that I want to get to, and then we'll wrap it up. Ricky Rubio, we talked about this a little bit already, the role he's going to play on the team. His over-under on assists is at 6.5. Last year, he averaged 8.8. I don't think he got over 6 with Utah. He was always over 8 with Minnesota, but again, his role
is... Well, yeah, the 2 years in Utah were the only 2 years of his career he's averaged below this number.
6.5?
Yeah. Yeah, the only 2 years of his career he's averaged below this number were the 2 years in Utah. Now, I said when I first saw these, it's absolutely slammed the crap out of this over number because it's you look at his career numbers and that's what you think. But as we've talked, the question isn't going to be whether or not he's going to pass and get assists. It's going to be how many minutes is he going to play? Because right. I think that's going to be the most interesting part of this. So I still think I would take the over on this, but I'm less aggressive on it than I once was.
I think this is an interesting sign on Ricky Rubio. In his 6 years in Minnesota, he never had a usage rate over 20, which is, you know, the average. You split it up 500, you know, divided mm-hmm. by five.
Yep.
That's average, just 20, which was a little bit surprising to me because, you know, in my head, I think of Ricky Rubio as a highly used player in his early on Timberwolves days. But usage rate does not account for assist. But usage rate accounts for shots, free throws, and turnovers. And you know, to that end, I guess that does kind of make sense that he was always under 20 or under. All 3 years after Minnesota, the two in Utah and last year in Phoenix, he was over 20 in usage rate, which means he was more of a scoring option or a shooting option than he was a passing option. And we are, you know, to wrap it up, like we are assuming that Ricky Rubio is going to be more Utah and Phoenix, correct? Like that's our whole premise on this of how this works. So with that, you would assume he plays more like that, which is in less of a situation where he's pounding the rock and is the guy making passes. Is he going to make passes still? Yes. But to get up to like the 9 assists per game sort of thing, you got to be like fairly ball dominant. So I don't know what like the right thing is for him, because I don't think just because there was Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker means in this team, be exactly like that, Ricky. I think there's somewhere like in the middle of be Minnesota version of you and be post-Minnesota version of you. I think that's his optimized self. And that is probably over 6.5, but are we going to see optimized version of Ricky Rubio year one back in Minnesota? I don't know. I don't know. I think it's a fair line. I'll put it like that.
Despite everything you said, he still had his second highest assist per game total last year with Phoenix. So I have
moved like more into like a third role there. Whereas Utah, it was like Mitchell, then him.
Yeah. Right.
In usage. So maybe that was the middle.
It's very interesting. And like the one thing I look at is if he's going to be a closer, I genuinely wonder how different his role looks at the end of games versus when he comes off the bench and plays with like an Edwards or a Beasley.
Right.
When you're at the end of a game, and let's just say hypothetically, the end of game lineup typically is Rubio, Russell, Beasley, Okogie, and Kat. Sure. He is the at best the fourth scoring option in that scenario. But if he's out there, you're not going to use him as just a spot-up shooter. I don't necessarily – he's not going to be ball dominant. I'm struggling because I have no idea what his scenario looks like on this team. In Phoenix, you had a clear-cut number one option in Devin Booker. You had, I think, a fairly clear-cut number two option in Kelly Oubre. And then you had DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
and who's a good scoring center. In Minnesota, you have, I assume Kat's the best player on the team. I don't think that can be disputed. In terms of who's going to score more, I think it's, again, I'm going back to it. I think Kat and D'Lo are going to be pretty neck and neck this year. Right. I think the pairing of them is a higher caliber scoring duo than anything that they had in Phoenix. And then you add in Malik Beasley as sort of the equivalent to Kelly Oubre in terms of scoring production.
Sure.
I could see his role being fairly similar. With that, I don't know. Karl Anthony Towns is a better scorer than DeAndre Ayton. I think I could see his assist numbers staying up towards what they were last year, even in the same role. So I am taking the over. That's my final thought.
I would say it's close, and I think I would go over as well. Is that you went over too, David?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. 6.5 seems a little low.
I agree. Okay. We have one more, and I can't remember what it is. Hold on. Anthony Edwards, number one overall pick. A guy I've actually grown to like the more media I see of him. The video where he watches film with Mike Schmitz impressed me more than I expected. I wasn't huge on him coming into the draft. I'm starting to gain some admiration, or at least I'm very interested to see how he does. I have some optimism. With that said, his over-under for points per game is at 12.5. I think that's a pretty solid number if you're trying to get people to place bets, because that's a pretty good number. What do you guys think?
That's a very tasty number.
In what way?
He's a scorer. I mean, that's his thing. So if he's coming off the bench and his job is to go in and learn how to score at the NBA level and hopefully, ideally, eventually become a go-to scoring wing in the NBA, I think 12.5 on a team with Russell and with Rubio and with Beasley makes that a tough number to reach, especially considering how raw he is. But he's going to put shots up. I don't know how efficiently he'll score, but I think he's going to be pretty close to that number. I think I take the under, but I've said it before. I'm so bad at judging rookies as they come into the league. He could average 15, 16 points a game. I don't know. Who knows? I'm going to take the under, but that number is just really tough for me to make a gauge on. Dane, you sound like you have a more clear cut thought than I do.
Well, I just think it's like, if we watched him at Georgia before any team he was selected at, you'd be like, okay, who knows how efficiently he's going to do it, but this dude is for sure going to score more than 12 points a game in the NBA. Like, it's just his way, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's how he plays basketball. It's how he always has. You know, go back to high school, AAU, whatever. Like, dude is a shot creator and scorer, mm-hmm. like that, for himself. It would be hard, you know, to paint a situation where he's scoring under, you know, 12 or fewer points per game. However, this is kind of one of those situations where you've got three guys who are better than him, who are going to try to be getting their shots in D'Lo, Cat, and Beasley. I do think that I think it's just his way about him that he's going to score. He's going to, maybe it'll be some bad looks. I think you factor in COVID, and there's going to be games where he plays more, where he takes on a bigger unit in the second unit, or a bigger role in the second unit. I would feel pretty confident about over 12.5 for Anthony Edwards, because he's the number one overall pick.
Yep.
So the point that I want to make that I think is fun with this is 12.5, I think, is a good number. And if he's going to play and he's going to score, he's probably going to go over that. How many points per game did Lou Williams average last year winning Sixth Man of the Year?
I have a feeling you know if you're asking us. I have no idea.
Like, it was like 18. Mm-hmm. So, like, if he's scoring a lot over 12.5, suddenly we're talking about, like, Sixth Man of the Year Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I don't know. We disagree on him. I think he's going to start. Like, maybe not, the first few weeks. Like, I think Anthony Edwards, we have a 72-game season. That's an interesting over-under. How many games does Anthony Edwards start?
It's the usage as it is with many of these guys. Like,
right.
Again, man, it's a cop-out for me, but if he shows out right away, yeah, he's going to start. If he's as raw as scouts are saying and this draft is as bad as people are saying, I know he's the number one pick, but you're not going to start him if he isn't good right away. You're just not. especially when you have other options, and the Wolves have other options. Malik Beasley isn't an ideal three. Honestly, Okogie's probably not an ideal three. But if Anthony Edwards isn't good right away, he's not going to start. I hope I'm optimistic that he's going to be good enough to start right away, or not right away, but eventually.
Is he going to be better than Andrew Wiggins? Andrew Wiggins' rookie year, just that, like vacuum.
He's going to be used completely differently. Sure. I don't know.
So that's
I think there's a plausible chance he will be worse than Andrew Wiggins' rookie year. Andrew Wiggins' rookie year was the only guy on the team, and Flip Saunders force fed him in the post and made him put up close to or maybe over 20 points per game. That is not going to be Anthony Edwards' role. It's not. So he's going to have the advantage of having more talent around him and more spacing around him to do what he does. Andrew Wiggins did not have that luxury. He had Rubio, but he didn't have talent like D'Lo and Kat. So I think we're going to be able to see pretty quickly what kind of player he could be. But I'm not sure Wiggins is a fair comparison. I think it's interesting to look at end of the year Edwards. How will he compare to Wiggins last year? Maybe that's not fair because Wiggins had 5 years under his belt, but Wiggins seemed to start to be used in a slightly different role. They were trying to take away mid-range jumpers and make it more drives and three-pointers.
It's a good point. Like, how are they going to try and use Anthony Edwards? Like, and you would think going off of the system, it's like, and guys who played last year, it would be most similar to Andrew Wiggins, right?
Yeah.
You're just kind of clearing the top and you have four guys out around him. Maybe you have Kat coming up to set the screen and letting him create off of there. Like, what other role is he than that? If you're trying to point to another player from last season, it's you just go, okay, but that was such a big part of the Timberwolves pie was the kind of clear out and point Wiggins, right? But I think that's also probably the best way to use Anthony Edwards. And now as I just kind of talk this out, I'm getting more and more to the idea of whether he starts or not, I think he is staggered within that rotation by Saunders in a way that he can play that role where he is, you know, the isolation threat up top with the shooter spread around him. It's when one or both of Kat and D'Lo are off the floor. Maybe he's out there with Rubio. I think that's how you have to use him because
if you want to utilize him in that way, you want him on the floor with Rubio. Everyone keeps talking about his best case scenario is Donovan Mitchell. I've heard that a million, maybe not best case, but like that's a very high ceiling scenario for him is becoming Donovan Mitchell or something like that. And from what I've heard, Donovan Mitchell credits Rubio for helping him gain confidence right away. I doubt that's the main reason why they brought Rubio in. I think they just like him as a player, but that is absolutely an advantage. And if you want to use him in that way, you need Rubio out there. I think
you talk to anybody in that organization about Rubio,
the Jazz?
Or about Anthony Edwards. No, in the Timberwolves organization, the first thing they will bring up is Mitchell Rubio.
Yep.
Mitchell Rubio, the development there, and the way they both played on the floor together.
I don't know if it's the quality of the draft or if it's because Gerson Rosas and the whole front office loves Anthony Edwards. I don't know. Maybe you two know better than me, but they weren't successful in trading for a third star. I don't know how valiant of an effort there really was. Maybe it was just Twitter going crazy. I assume that's more what it was.
Right.
If Edwards can turn into his best case scenario, that is better than trading for a third star because then you have a third star quality scorer on a rookie contract for 4 years. And it gives you a little bit more.
You can't use him like a Kogi. He can't be
right.
He can't just be a Kogi.
Absolutely. You need to try to make him into his best case scenario. Otherwise, what are you doing? I totally agree with that.
Exactly. And to that end, I think that role scores more than 12.5 points a game.
I think you convinced me. I think you swayed me. You got me, Dan.
Yes.
All right.
And this is what we podcast. We work stuff out.
No, this is what Wolves Wired was. I have a point. Dane makes a better point, and then I change my mind. I'm just kidding. I think that is a good place to wrap it up. Dane, David, I miss podding with you guys. This is a lot of fun.
Sure, it's been good.
You guys are both doing a lot of cool things. Check out everything David's doing at Prof Cedar. He's writing about the Timberwolves for A Wolf Among Wolves. He's writing about the Loons for Zone Coverage. He's killing it. He's in Kansas City right now. Are you still in Arby's? in Arby's parking lot?
I'm still sitting in the Arby's parking lot.
Let's let you get out of there. Dane, I said I'd say it at the end of the pod too. You are absolutely killing it. Blue Wire Podcast, now the Dane Moore NBA podcast. Follow him on Patreon. Subscribe to him on Patreon. For the love of God, just do it. If you're listening to this podcast, I hope you already do it. But if you don't, it's at patreon.com/DaneMooreNBA. Guys, thank you so much for doing this. I truly appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
It's good to talk to you guys. I miss you.
Always a pleasure. Yep.
So also follow Brendan Hedke at B_Hedke NBA. I think that's what it is. I should probably check before I say anything else. Follow Brendan Hedke on Twitter. This is his podcast, the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. Thank you for listening. So long.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.